The following program is a Nightingale Conant production for Simon & Schuster Audio.
How many times have you wanted to do something, but stopped yourself because you were afraid? Maybe you canceled a skiing trip because you figured you'd end up with a broken ankle. Or maybe you decided not to ask for a raise because you were afraid your supervisor would say no and not like you anymore. It all comes down to a familiar and powerful emotion, fear. And all too often, we decide that feeling fear is a good enough reason not to do something. But it doesn't have to be that way. By taking the path that Dr. Susan Jeffers is about to start you on, you can rid yourself of the faulty thinking that stops you from pushing through your fears. Step by step, you can learn to feel the fear and do it anyway. Susan Jeffers received her doctorate in psychology from Columbia University and began teaching about fear at the New School for Social Research in New York City. Through her seminars, public speaking, and numerous media appearances, Dr. Jeffers has inspired thousands to turn their fears into confidence and their indecision into action. So now, feel the fear and do it anyway.
What is it for you? Fear of making decisions? Being alone, public speaking, fear of intimacy, aging, asserting yourself, losing a loved one, ending a relationship? Is it fear of success, failure, or rejection? Perhaps you could add a few more to the list. Not to worry. This program will begin to move you from a place of pain, paralysis, and depression to one of power, energy, and excitement, despite the fear. I've often been asked to explain why we have so many fears. I don't really know the answer to that. I know that some fear is instinctual and healthy and keeps us alert to trouble. The rest, the part that keeps us from moving forward, is inappropriate and destructive and perhaps can be blamed on our conditioning. After all, have you ever heard a mother call out to her child as he or she goes off to school, "Take some risks today, darling"? Hardly. We are constantly told by those who love us, "Be careful." This "be careful" carries with it a double message. The world is really dangerous out there, and you won't be able to handle it. This might give us a clue as to what is really at the bottom of all our fears. A few moments ago, I mentioned a whole range of possible fears one might have, very diverse kinds of fears. But if we get to the bottom of every fear that one can imagine, if we get down to the real nitty-gritty of the issue, we hit the biggest fear of all, the one that really keeps us stuck. Are you ready? Here it is. At the bottom of every one of your fears is simply the fear that you can't handle whatever life may bring you. I know you may have been anticipating something much more dramatic than that, but the truth is, if you knew that you could handle anything that comes your way, what would you possibly have to fear? The answer is nothing. I know you're still not jumping up and down for joy, but believe me when I tell you, I have just given you a great piece of news. What I have just told you means you can handle all your fears without having to control anything in the outside world. This should be a tremendous relief. You no longer have to control what your mate does, what your children do, or what your boss does. You don't have to control what happens at an interview, what happens at your job, or what happens to the stock market, and so on. All you have to do to diminish your fear is to develop more trust in your ability to handle whatever comes your way. Right now, take the time to make a few signs that contain just three words: "I'll handle it." And when the "what ifs" come up for you, you'll counter with, "I'll handle it." What if I lose my job? I'll handle it. What if I become ill? I'll handle it. What if my relationship ends? I'll handle it. What if I'm rejected? I'll handle it. These three magical words are a wonderful first step in your developing the kind of trust in yourself that will allow you to relax and begin enjoying the excitement life can bring. Keep repeating them. Eventually, you will begin to say to yourself with confidence, whatever happens to me, given any situation in life, I'll handle it. You are now going to hear five truths about fear, truths that I've discovered over the years. These truths will put fear into a new perspective that will give you the rationale for moving forward despite the fear.
Truth number one, the fear will never go away as long as you continue to grow.
It's true. The fear will never go away as long as you continue to grow. If you were like all my other students, you really didn't want to hear that. You were hoping that my words of wisdom would miraculously make your fears go away. But I'm sorry to say, it doesn't work that way. On the other hand, rather than thinking of it as a disappointment, consider it a relief that you no longer have to work so hard on getting rid of the fear. It isn't going to go away. As long as you continue to push out into the world, as long as you continue to stretch your capabilities, as long as you continue to take new risks in making your dreams come true, you are going to experience fear.
Truth number two. The only way to get rid of the fear of doing something is to go out and do it.
This sounds contradictory to truth number one, yet it isn't. Fear of particular situations dissolve when we finally confront them. The doing it comes before the fear goes away. The first time I stood in front of a classroom, my stomach felt like it was on a roller coaster. I could feel my heart pounding and my knees shaking. Somehow I got through that first class period, not ecstatically looking forward to the second one the following week. I kept at it, though, and one day as I was approaching that once-dreaded classroom, I realized I was no longer afraid. My fear had turned into sweet anticipation. The doing it made the fear disappear.
Truth number three. The only way you will feel better about yourself is to go out and do it.
Not when I feel better about myself, then I'll go out and do it. The doing it comes before the feeling better about yourself. When you make something happen, not only does the fear of that situation go away, you also get a big bonus. You do a lot towards building your self-confidence.
Truth number four. Not only are you going to experience fear every time you're on unfamiliar territory, so is everyone else.
When I realized this, that everyone is afraid on unfamiliar territory, I said to myself, you mean all those people out there that I've been envying because they're not afraid have really been afraid? Why didn't somebody tell me? I guess I never asked. I was sure I was the only person out there feeling so inadequate. It was such a relief to realize I was not alone in this. I've got the rest of the world to keep me company. Now, you may have already begun to ask yourself, why should I put myself through all the discomfort that comes with taking risks? Why don't I just go on living life the way I've been living it? You might find my answer to that question surprising.
Truth number five. Pushing through fear is less frightening than living with the bigger underlying fear that comes from a feeling of helplessness.
Let me say that again. Pushing through fear is less frightening than living with the bigger underlying fear that comes from a feeling of helplessness. The more helpless we feel, the more severe is the undercurrent of dread that comes with knowing there are situations in life over which we have no control. Things such as the death of a spouse or the loss of a job. We find ourselves obsessing about possible catastrophes. What if? Fear permeates our lives. The irony is that people who refuse to take risks live with a feeling of dread that is far more severe than what they would feel if they took the risks necessary to make them less helpless. Only they don't know it. By now you've gotten the picture. We can't escape fear. We can only transform it from an anchor holding us in one spot to a companion that accompanies us throughout all our many exciting adventures. The solution is to feel the fear and do it anyway. I've just touched on a critical insight about fear, and it is important to go into it a bit deeper. That insight is this. If everybody has fear when approaching something totally new in their life, yet so many are out there doing it despite the fear, then we must conclude that fear is not the problem. Obviously, the real issue has nothing to do with the fear itself, but rather how we hold the fear. Some hold fear from a position of power, energy, and excitement, and some hold it from a position of pain, paralysis, and depression. The secret of handling fear is to move yourself from a position of pain to a position of power. The fact that you have the fear then becomes irrelevant. Before going any further, let's talk about the word power. I've had a few people tell me that they don't like the concept of power and want no part of it. It is true that in our society, the word power has some negative overtones. It often implies control over others, and unfortunately is often misused. The kind of power I'm talking about is entirely different. In fact, it makes us feel less manipulative of those around us and certainly more loving. I'm talking about power within the self. This means power over our perceptions of the world, power over how we react to situations in our lives, power to do what is necessary for our own self-growth, power to create joy and satisfaction in our lives, power to act, and power to love. The truth is that love and power go together. With power, one can really begin to open up the heart. With no power, love is distorted. A good antidote to your possible inner conflict about power and love is to repeat to yourself at least 10 times each morning, noon, and night these three affirmations. I am powerful and I am loving. I am powerful and I am loved. And my very favorite, I am powerful and I love it. Say these three statements aloud right now and feel the energy that the words convey. I am powerful and I am loving. I am powerful and I am loved. I am powerful and I love it. Their constant repetition will help make the concepts of power and love more compatible and certainly more comfortable. Now that I've explained the kind of power I am talking about, let's explore how we can actually get in touch with that part of ourselves that is powerful and loving and knows there is nothing to fear. To help you move yourself from a position of pain to one of power about fear, I want you to answer the following questions as honestly as you can. Do you see yourself as a victim? Or are you taking responsibility for what happens to you in life? The idea of self-responsibility is probably not new to you. For years, you've been bombarded with the message, take responsibility for your own life. So many of us think we are taking responsibility, but I'm convinced that most of us do not really understand what that means. To most of us, it has to do with daily survival. This may be part of it, but it certainly doesn't hit the heart of the issue. For example, Edward is an extremely wealthy, high-powered executive who lives in a constant state of anxiety. When I suggested that he go for some professional help, he responded that if the people in his life would change, everything would be fine. If only his wife would be more loving, if only his boss wasn't always on his case, and if only his son would stop taking drugs, then he'd be fine. He feels there's no reason for him to go for help. It's all their fault. Is he taking responsibility for his experience of life? Absolutely not. I know many people who are constantly complaining about how other people or situations are ruining their lives. Are any of them really taking responsibility for their experience of life? No way. They are all, in some way, playing the role of the victim. They have all given away their power to someone or something else. Keep in mind that when we give away our power, we move ourselves into a position of pain and paralysis when it comes to fear. The truth is, you really are in control, in total control of your reaction to whatever happens to you in life. I know it is very difficult to accept that we are the cause of the feelings that take away our joy in life. It is very upsetting when we begin to see ourselves as our own worst enemy. On the other hand, this realization is our biggest blessing. If we know we can create our own misery, it stands to reason that we can also create our own joy. Since really taking responsibility for your experience of life is an elusive concept, I will explain some of the components of a more powerful way of living. Just keep remembering that whenever you are not taking responsibility, you put yourself in a position of pain and hence decrease your ability to handle the fear in your life. So what does taking responsibility really mean?
Taking responsibility means never blaming anyone else for anything you are being, doing, having, or feeling.
I can just hear some of you saying, never? But this time it really is his fault, or her fault, or the boss's fault, or my son's fault, or the economy's fault, or my mother's fault, or my father's fault, or my friend's fault. Really it is. Now, until you fully understand that you, and no one else, creates what goes on in your head, you will never be in control of your life. Taking responsibility means not blaming any outside force for your experience of life. When you do, you are literally giving away all your power, and thus creating a situation of pain, paralysis, and depression. If something in your life isn't working, ask yourself, how can I change it? For example, if you're in an unsatisfying relationship, ask yourself, why have I stayed? Or look at your expectations. Am I expecting my mate to be doing something for me that I should be doing for myself? And so on. Look at all aspects of your life and ask what could you be doing to make it better. As an exercise, see if you can go 1 week without criticizing anyone or complaining about anything. You may have a very silent week. Griping is a habit and needs to be replaced by something more positive. This takes a bit of time and ingenuity, but it will be a far more satisfying and joyful way to go through life. What else does taking responsibility mean?
Taking responsibility means not blaming yourself.
I know this sounds contradictory, but it is not. Anything that takes away your power or your pleasure makes you a victim. Don't make yourself a victim of yourself. This, again, is not taking responsibility for your experience of life. It is important to understand that you have always done the best that you possibly could, given the person you were at any point in time. Now that you are learning a new way of thinking, you can begin to perceive things differently and possibly change many of your actions and reactions. It is all simply part of the learning process, the process of moving yourself from pain to power, and it takes time. You must be patient with yourself.
Taking responsibility means knowing where and when you are not taking responsibility so that you can eventually change it.
It took me years before I realized that the place I played the victim role most was with the men in my life. I remember many evenings with my girlfriends complaining for countless hours about the grief the men in my life were causing me. Naturally, my loyal friends shared my drama, as I shared theirs. It was a moan and groan society at its best. The payoff was that we didn't have to create our own happiness. We could simply blame men for not giving it to us. I finally learned there is really only one person in the world who can make me happy or unhappy, and that is me. Ironically, only through this realization have I been able, for the first time in my life, to have a wonderfully nurturing relationship. Relationship with another is only one area where you can give away your power. It is important to look at all the areas of your life as well to determine where you are not taking responsibility. Your clue will be any one of the following signs: anger, upset, blaming others, pain, vengeance, self-pity, envy, helplessness, impatience, joylessness, fatigue, addictions, a judgmental attitude, disappointment, jealousy, and so on. Have you ever felt any of these emotions? Well, whenever you do, figure out what you are not doing in your life that is causing you to feel that way. You will be surprised at how easy it is to locate where you are abdicating responsibility.
Taking responsibility means handling your biggest enemy, your chatterbox.
This is the little voice inside each and every one of us, the voice that tries to drive us crazy and often succeeds. I'll bet some of you don't even know it's there, but I promise you it holds the key to all your fears. It's the voice that heralds doom, lack, and losing. We are so used to its presence, we often don't even notice it is talking to us. If you're not aware of your chatterbox, it sounds something like this.
If I call him, maybe he'll think I'm too pushy. But maybe if I don't call him, he'll think I'm not interested. But if I call him and his answering machine is on, I'll wonder where he is, and it'll ruin my whole evening because I'll know he's out with another woman. But if I don't call, I'll wonder anyway. Maybe I shouldn't go out tonight. He might call, and then he'll think I'm out with someone else, and he'll think I don't care. I wonder why he hasn't called yet. Maybe I was too cool today when I bumped into him at lunch. Maybe I should have been more friendly. I wish I were wearing something prettier. I look so fat in this dress. Oh, my makeup, it was terrible. He did seem a little cool, I'm sure of it. I wonder if it was because he heard I went out with Alan the other night. Well, I don't think he should expect me to sit home every night and wait for him to call. He has a lot of nerve if he expects that. Okay, the next time I see him, I'll ask him why he hasn't called. We were supposed to go to the movies this week, and he didn't even remember. I'm going to confront him about his lack of responsibility. I mean, I won't be judgmental or anything, but I'll certainly let him know how I feel about his attitude. I mean, how can he expect me to still be friendly with him when I don't know when he's going to call or not?
No wonder so many of us hate being alone and can't be in a room without turning on the radio or television for company. Anything to escape such insanity. Be assured that this insanity seems to be an unavoidable phase in the growth process. We are all victims of our own chatterboxes at some point in our lives. Now that you know it exists, you will also notice that you can't seem to turn it off, at least not yet. The good news is that there are very effective ways to get rid of this kind of negativity. Right now, commit to replacing your chatterbox with a loving voice. You don't have to hang out with enemies, even if they are within yourself. By the way, once we get rid of the negativity our chatterbox brings, we really begin to enjoy being alone. These are just a few of the many ways we can begin to take responsibility for our lives, and the time to begin is now. When you begin to notice how many times you blame outside forces, when you begin to notice how many times you blame yourself, and when you begin to hear the destructive messages you are given by your chatterbox, you will begin to understand why you have felt so powerless, so fearful, in facing many important situations in your life. I've just introduced you to your chatterbox, one of your biggest enemies when it comes to fear. The trick now is to replace it with a much more positive voice. And in our society, this is harder than you think. I was having dinner with a friend one evening, trying to make her see the positive side of something she fervently viewed as negative. She suddenly snapped at me, "You're beginning to sound like Pollyanna." Much to my surprise, I snapped back, "What's so terrible about Pollyanna? What's wrong with feeling good about life despite the obstacles that come your way? What's wrong with looking at the sun instead of gloom and doom? What's wrong with trying to see good in everything?" "Nothing is wrong with it," I said. "In fact, why would anyone resist thinking that way?" And resist we do. Positive thinking is one of the most difficult of all concepts to get across to people. When I present my ideas on positive thinking in my workshops and classes, my students respond immediately with, "Oh, Susan, that's not realistic." When I question them about what makes negative thinking more realistic, they can't give me an answer. There is an automatic assumption that negative is realistic and positive is unrealistic. Upon inspection, this is pure madness. It is reported that over 90% of what we worry about never happens. If this is so, being positive is far more realistic than being negative. Being positive is also being more powerful. I learned an amazing demonstration of the effectiveness of positive versus negative thinking, which I now use in my workshops. I ask a student to come up and stand facing the rest of the class. After making sure she has no problems with her arms, I ask her to make a fist and extend her right arm out in front of her. I then tell her to resist my attempt to push her arm down with my hand. Usually, I can't budge her arm. I then ask her to put her arm down, close her eyes, and 10 times repeat out loud the negative statement, "I am a weak and unworthy person." I then ask her to open her eyes and extend her arm again, exactly as she had the first time. Again, I remind her to resist as hard as she can. Immediately, I am able to bring down the arm. It is as though all strength has left her body. I wish I had a camera to capture the expression on her face as she finds it impossible to resist my pressure. I then ask her to once again close her eyes and repeat 10 times the positive statement, "I am a strong and worthy person." Once again, I ask her to extend her arm and resist my pressure. To her amazement and everyone else's, I cannot budge the arm. If I continue interspersing positive with negative, the same results occur. Weak words mean a weak arm. Strong words mean a strong arm. This is a stunning demonstration of the power of the words we speak. The amazing aspect of this experiment is that it doesn't matter if we believe the words or not. The mere uttering of them makes our subconscious mind believe them. It is as though the subconscious mind doesn't know what is true or false. It doesn't judge. It only reacts to the words it is fed. When the words, "I am weak," come in, our subconscious mind instructs our body, intellect, and emotions, "Weak, weak, weak," and we act as if we really are weak. And interestingly, the world treats us as if we are weak. People tend to walk all over us. When the words, "I am strong," come in, the instruction to our body, intellect, and emotions is strong, strong, strong. And we act as if we are strong, and the world treats us with much more respect. What does all this tell you? Stop feeding yourself negative thoughts that take away your power and make you paralyzed with fear. But here you are, a blob of negativity. How do you even begin to turn around those miserable thoughts that take away your power? You begin by doing the same thing you would do if your body were out of shape. You create an exercise program, in this case, to retrain your mind. To do so, you must take action. It takes a special commitment and a great deal of practice to become a positive thinker. And once you get it all down perfectly, a maintenance program is a must. I know of no one who has been able to make positive a permanent way of thinking without practice. We must keep at it, or the chatterbox takes over. Before giving you a plan of action, I recommend you get a few things to make your daily routine more efficient and pleasurable. 1. Purchase a small portable cassette player. 2. Pick up some inspirational and motivational tapes and books. 3. Fill up some index cards with positive quotes and affirmations. One of my favorite quotes comes from John Shedd. "Ships in harbor are safe, but that's not what ships are built for." Put your quotes all over the place, on your mirrors, your desk, the refrigerator door, in your car, your diary, and so on. Do the same with your affirmations. What exactly is an affirmation? An affirmation is a positive statement that something is already happening. It's not happening tomorrow or in the future, but right now. For those of you who are not familiar with affirmations, I consider them one of the most powerful tools you have at your disposal. They are self-talk in its highest form. A few affirmations you might want to begin with are, I'm breaking through old patterns and moving forward with my life. I am now creating my perfect relationship. I am drawing to me all good things. My world is filled with abundance. I am creating a beautiful day. I relax and let go. I make a difference. There is plenty of time. These are just a few to get you started. There are some things to remember about affirmations. 1. Always state them in the present. I am now handling my fears, not I am going to handle my fears. 2. Always phrase them in the positive rather than the negative. I am becoming more confident every day, not I am no longer putting myself down. Select affirmations that feel right to you at any given time. What feels right changes as your situation and mood changes. Now that you have all the necessary tools, you're ready to put them into use. I will illustrate how by briefly going through a sample day. You can alter my suggestions to suit your own situation. The whole point of the program can be summed up in 3 words, out-talk your negativity. You might think you haven't got the time to begin such a program. Well, it doesn't take any extra time. Take the time you usually spend thinking terrible thoughts and use it to think positive thoughts. No extra time is required. So let's begin your first positive day. 1. As you begin to awaken, reach out and turn on your tape machine and listen to one side of the inspirational tape that you chose the night before. Lie with your eyes closed and let the soothing, loving messages sink in. Affirm over and over again, I am creating a beautiful day. You have to admit, this certainly beats lying there thinking about how you don't want to get up and face all the lousy things you have to do all day. 2. As you get out of bed, pay attention to the positive quotes with which you've surrounded yourself on the wall, your bed table, your mirror, and so on. 3. Put some calming music into your tape player. Get some environmental or subliminal tapes that provide sounds of nature, birds, the ocean, or a mountain stream. 4. As you dress, with the music in the background, begin to repeat the affirmations you've chosen for the day. Repeat your affirmations for at least 10 minutes. Don't let the little voice take over. Out-talk your chatterbox. While the chatterbox will always be around to remind us of our humanness, with practice, you'll hear it less and hear your positive voice more. Just trust that constant repetition will eventually do the trick. 5. If you exercise daily, you have an opportune time to pump in your positive thinking while you're working out. 6. While you're eating your breakfast, read a few pages of one of your self-help books. The newspaper can come later, when the negativity of the news doesn't set the tone for the rest of the day. 7. Breakfast is over, and it is now time to get yourself to work. If you drive, you're lucky. I live in Los Angeles, and I often hear people lamenting the time they have to spend in their automobiles. Not me. I've made my car my temple of learning, and I can't wait to get into it. As soon as I turn on the motor, I turn on my tapes. I listen to either motivational or inspirational messages or music that makes me feel great. But remember, do not use your relaxation tapes in the car, for obvious reasons. 8. As you walk into your office, be aware of the positive messages you've already placed there. 9. Unless you are a total masochist, you will want to maintain the high energy and fearless state you plugged into with your early morning ritual. As daily pressures and doubts begin to seep in, simply give yourself a fix of positive energy. All you have to do is repeat your affirmations over and over again until you feel your strength and optimism return. Your chatterbox will also be trying to enter your consciousness all day. Just keep remembering to out-talk it. If you stay home with the children, you can play your positive messages all day as you do your chores and run your errands. And if you have small children at home, Think about the positive impact these tapes will have on their young and impressionable minds. 10. Before you go to sleep, put a guided visualization or relaxation tape into your player and just let in the soothing messages. These caring tapes serve you much better than your chatterbox, which always tries to convince you that you haven't done enough that day or that you haven't done it right. Please believe me when I tell you that if you commit to such a program, your whole world will turn around. The mistake people make is that they stop working on themselves as soon as they feel better. Don't quit. It is a lifelong process. Without your negative chatterbox, you will wonder what you were always so afraid of before. You will have energy you never thought possible. You will laugh a lot and love a lot more. You will draw more and more positive people into your life. You will be healthier physically. You will be happy to be alive. One more thought about positive thinking. It's important that you don't use it as an excuse for denial. No one is immune to pain, and it shouldn't be denied when it exists. A positive thinker knows that pain is part of life, and in the end, there is much to be learned from any pain we experience. What positive thinking does is offer a power boost to help you handle whatever life hands you. Your bad breaks do not dominate your life. Your indomitable strength does. And when you feel that indomitable strength, you really can handle any of your fears from a position of power, the kind of power that really can make things happen. Do you consider yourself a giving person? Think about it for a moment. Do you really give, or do you just exchange a you do this for me with an I'll do this for you? I assure you that most of us do not really know how to give. Most of us operate on a hidden barter system. Few people ever genuinely give anything away without expecting something in return, money, appreciation, love, or whatever. You might be saying, what's wrong with getting something back? My answer is nothing. However, if all you're giving is about getting, think how fearful you will become. And more than likely, the question will soon become, am I getting back enough? This kind of thinking sets up a voracious need to control others so you won't feel shortchanged. It can destroy your peace of mind and create anger and resentment. A large part of my work with people is based on my belief that one of the most important lessons one has to learn is how to give. In this lies one important antidote to our fear. As babies, we are the personification of neediness. We come into this world as total takers. We have to take or we will die. Our survival is tied up with the world nurturing us. As the years pass, we function as more and more independent beings, able to take care of ourselves, or so it appears. Yet there seems to be a part of us that never progresses much beyond the crib. Metaphorically, we remain frightened that no one will come to relieve our hunger. When we are fearful, we can't genuinely give. We are imbued with a deep-seated sense of scarcity in the world, as if there weren't enough to go around. Not enough love, not enough money, not enough praise, not enough attention, simply not enough. So how do we begin a program of giving? What is it that we have to learn to give away? You can begin by giving away thanks. Start by thinking about the people presently in your life and significant ones from your past. Put each of their names on a separate sheet of paper, then list what each of them has contributed to you in their own special way. Even if they have brought you pain and you dislike them intensely, list any contribution they've made to your life. Be creative, you'll always find something. Once you have listed all the gifts from various people in your life, systematically go about thanking them. Even if they are not alive, give them a mental or written thank you. If it is someone you haven't seen or heard from in a while, surprise them with a call or a letter, simply acknowledging them for what they have contributed to your life. You will be amazed at the pleasure you will get and give from doing this. For some in our lives, such as ex-husbands and ex-friends or bosses, alienated parents or children, this can be especially difficult. If this is so for you, it is time to seek out ways of ridding yourself of anger and pain, which you carry from the past into your present relationships. Anger is poisonous to your life and creates a huge amount of fear in very subtle ways. When you can actually drop your anger and begin to thank those who, while they have caused you upset, have also made some contribution to your life, you will have come a long way in becoming free of fear. If this seems difficult for you right now, start in casual situations such as with the people at work. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Start getting those words in your consciousness about everyone around you. Start giving it away instead of waiting for it to come to you. What else can we learn to give away? Give away information. So much of what we learn in life comes to us with great difficulty, and we have the tendency to want to see others struggle as much as we have. Turn this around and begin giving others as much help as you can possibly give them. Professionally, this can be very difficult. Again, the giving has to be done with no expectation of return. More likely than not, however, the return will be enormous. And if someone does use information you've given them to hurt you in some way, remember, you'll handle it. Keep in mind, you are filled with an abundance of ideas and possibilities. When we become a support to others, we become bigger than we are. Also, when people use what they have learned from us, our effect in this world is magnified. Like a pebble creating ripples in the water, we become a source of all good things. Give away time. Listen to a friend's problem. Get involved in something bigger than yourself. Volunteer. Read a book to a child. Sharing time with others takes you out of yourself and helps you operate from a different part of your being, the part that is loving, nurturing, and abundant. Give away money. Money is a huge confrontation for most of us. The answer to an obsession about money lies in loosening up and letting go. Within reason, begin to give it away with the trust that you will always find a way to have whatever you need. Give away love. As far as I'm concerned, everything I've mentioned is about giving away love. But there are other ingredients in loving. For example, when we let someone be who they are without trying to change them, that is giving away love. When we trust that someone can handle their own life and act accordingly, that is giving away love. When we let go and allow others to learn and grow without feeling our existence is threatened, that is giving away love. But how many relationships do you know that look like that? We've talked about giving away thanks, information, time, and love. I'm sure you can think of other things to add to the list. But you get the idea. Giving is about outflow. It is about letting go of the crouched, withholding person and standing tall with outstretched arms. When we really feel this sense of abundance, we truly understand the saying, "My cup runneth over." Whether you presently believe it or not, your life is already abundant. You just haven't noticed it. One way to increase your awareness is through what I have coined the Book of Abundance. Instead of a traditional diary, which for many is comprised of doom and gloom, wish and want, create a Book of Abundance, which in effect simply states, "I have." Every night before you go to bed, list 50 things that day that you have to be grateful for. Your car started, a compliment from a friend, a friendly hello from the postman, a beautiful sky, a chance to contribute, and so on. Look for blessings and you will notice them all over the place. They will envelop you. There is so much that you are not seeing that is already there. There is no need to feel scarcity when there is such abundance. Just keep remembering that our lesson in life, our school, is to get to the point where we are the givers. When we are aware of the fact that we have, we can give. When we are the givers, we have nothing to fear. We are powerful and we are loving. The trick in life is not figuring out what you can get, but what you can give. One of the most valuable lessons in learning to diminish fear is embodied in the phrase, "Say yes to your universe." I first heard these words from a wonderful teacher of mine, and when I asked her what she meant, she said, "It's simple. Whatever happens to you in life, just nod your head up and down instead of side to side. Just say yes instead of no." Over the years, I've incorporated this phrase into my life and work with magical results. The term universe refers to that life plan that seems to take over despite what we have in mind, that force operating seemingly on its own that very often interferes with our picture of how we would like things to be. So often, when we're all set to move in a specific direction, an unexpected event happens to change everything. Those unexpected events, or even the possibility of the unexpected, sets us up for a great deal of fear. We anticipate the worst. Just remember this: when you say yes, you diminish your fear. The phrase "say yes" means to agree to those things that life hands us. Saying yes means letting go of resistance and letting in the possibilities that our universe offers in terms of new ways of seeing the world. It means to relax your body and calmly survey the situation, thereby reducing upset and anxiety. Aside from the emotional benefits, the physical benefits are enormous. Conversely, saying no means to be a victim. The victim says, "How could this happen to me?" Saying no means to block, to fight, to resist opportunities for growth and challenge. Saying no creates tension, exhaustion, wasted expenditure of energy, emotional upheaval, or worse, it creates apathy. "I can't cope. I can't go on. There is no hope." The truth of the matter is that saying yes is our only hope. Saying yes does not mean giving up and accepting in the negative sense. It means getting up and acting on your belief that you can create meaning and purpose in whatever life hands you. I found the most extreme and moving example of saying yes in the pages of Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, which was about his experience in a concentration camp. As I read it, I painfully pushed through page after page of descriptions that defy human comprehension. I couldn't keep back my tears. But as I continued to read, my heart slowly started to lighten. Not only had Frankl and others like him faced the concentration camp, but according to the definition I just gave you, they actually said yes to their universe. They were able to create a positive experience out of what life handed them. They were able to find personal meaning and growth and a way of seeing the world that created value from their experience. As Frankl wrote, "The experiences of camp life show that a man does have a choice of action. There were enough examples, often of a heroic nature, which proved that apathy could be overcome, irritability suppressed. Man can preserve a vestige of spiritual freedom, of independence of mind, even in such terrible conditions of psychic and physical stress." We who lived in concentration camps can remember the men who walked through the huts comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread. They may have been few in number, but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken away from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way. The way in which a man accepts his fate and all the suffering it entails, the way in which he takes up his cross, gives him ample opportunity, even in the most difficult circumstances, to add a deeper meaning to his life. As I finished the last page, I knew that a dramatic change had taken place within me. I would never again experience fear with the same intensity I'd experienced it before reading the book. I knew that if Frankl was able to create something positive out of his experience, which was the worst my mind could imagine, then I and everyone else could create value out of anything life could possibly hand us. It is a matter of remaining conscious that we have the choice. I had an opportunity to test out the value of saying yes in my own life when I had a mastectomy a number of years ago. I remember lying in my hospital bed the day after the operation thinking, "Okay, Susan, for years you've been teaching others how to say yes to the universe. Can you say yes to something as potentially devastating as a mastectomy?" At that moment, I realized I had the choice. Say no and become the victim. Why did this happen to me? Or say yes and take on the challenge of creating something positive out of my situation. My answer to myself was a resounding yes. I began by looking around at the many cards and bouquets of flowers I had received from friends and family and realized, perhaps for the first time in my life, how much people cared for me. That was a beautiful realization. The man in my life had been a source of great comfort. Indeed, he had revealed to me a magnificent, nurturing part of his nature that I had never seen before. As a result, our relationship deepened enormously. In fact, it was this experience that convinced us we wanted to spend the rest of our lives together, and a short time later, we were married. I have been asked what would have happened if he left me instead. My answer is that I would have learned early in the relationship that this was a man with whom I would not want to spend the rest of my life. I would have felt hurt, but I would have gotten over that. I'd have handled it. I then decided to take total responsibility for the situation and began to think about what I might have done to create cancer in my body. I examined my diet and realized that I had abused myself by eating very unhealthy food. I immediately made the decision to become a healthier eater. I also realized that I was carrying around a lot of anger from the past, anger at my parents, my ex-husband, my children, and so on. I knew that anger has often been associated with cancer. I made a decision to really work at letting go of that anger and opening up my heart so that I could give and receive love more freely. As I was able to do this, all my relationships improved, and so did the quality of my life. I know that it is not easy to say yes when a child is gravely ill, if you become physically disabled, if you lose your job, or if your spouse dies. But people do it all the time. The world is filled with people who have been handed the worst life has to offer, and they have come out winners. Remember that in saying yes to your universe lies the antidote to all your fears. Say it with me now. Yes. 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 I've talked about a lot of fear-busting tools thus far. Affirmations, saying yes to your universe, positive thinking, taking responsibility, prosperity, consciousness, learning to give, and more. The reason these are very powerful tools is because they open us up to a place within, which, when tapped, allows us to feel fulfilled. I choose to call this place the higher self, simply because it implies a transcendence of that part of us that dwells on the petty things that cause fear, hate, scarcity, and all other forms of negativity. It brings to mind a new plane of existence that has little to do with everyday upsets and struggle. This higher self is capable of a high degree of sensitivity and attunement to a harmonious flow within the universe. It is the container of many sublime virtues: creativity, intuition, trust, love, joy, inspiration, aspiration, caring, giving, and so on. Everything we, in our heart of hearts, would like to experience. Too many of us seem to be searching for something out there to make our lives complete. We feel alienated, lonely, empty. No matter what we do or have, we never feel fulfilled. This feeling of emptiness or intense loneliness is our clue that we are off course and that we need to correct. Very often we think that the correction lies in a new mate, house, car, job, or whatever. Not so. I believe that what all of us are really searching for is this divine essence within ourselves. When you are feeling the sense of being lost or off course, the way to find your way home again is simply to use the tools that will align you with your higher self, thus allowing the good feelings to flow once again. Our mind can choose to listen to our chatterbox blabbering away all kinds of self-defeating negativity, or it can choose to listen to our higher self, which is self-affirming, loving, giving, and abundant. All of the exercises and concepts suggested in this program are geared toward having the conscious mind open its door to the abundance of the higher self. If we listen to the chatterbox, our experience of life is fear-producing, and we stop ourselves from expanding. If we listen to the higher self, our experience of life is joyful and abundant and devoid of fear. We are all experts at listening to our chatterbox. Our task is now to become an expert at listening to our higher self. Then true choice will be possible. Metaphysicians talk about laws of universal energy. One of these is the law of attraction. You will recognize it as like attracts like. When we send out negative energy from our chatterbox, what will we attract? Negative energy. When we send out positive energy from our higher self, what will we attract? Positive energy. Perhaps this makes clearer why it is imperative to train the mind to send out positive thoughts. Some of you might have trouble accepting the idea of universal energy. You don't need to believe this concept in order for you to tap into your higher self. However, when you see yourself connected to something bigger than yourself, you no longer feel you must do it all alone. Your sense of power becomes highly magnified, and your fears are greatly diminished. With the universal energy on your side, you can learn to trust not only yourself, but the universe as well. This kind of dual trust signals the end of fear. When you stay centered, there is nothing to fear. You are tapping from your source of power, and everything is okay. I am convinced that if we do not consciously and consistently focus on the higher part of ourselves, we will never experience the kind of joy, satisfaction, and connectedness we are all seeking. It takes practice and vigilance. When people speak of being on the path or of life as a journey, they are referring to the constant vigil required to train the conscious mind to listen to the lessons of the higher self. The biggest pitfall you will find as you make your way through life is impatience. Remember that being impatient is simply a way of beating yourself up. It creates stress, dissatisfaction, and fear. When we wake up to the potential power within, our impulse is to grab it all quickly. The more we grab, the more it seems to elude us. Again, it requires trust. Trust that it is all happening perfectly. Trust your feelings. If the path you're on isn't providing you joy, satisfaction, creativity, love, and caring, that's not it. Say to yourself, okay, I tried this, and that isn't it. What else can I try? Don't be deceived into thinking that by changing the external, the internal will be changed. It works the other way around. The path that needs changing is the one in your mind. This is not to say that once you become aligned with your higher self, you won't want to change things in your physical world, but it is your mind that has to be changed first. Then all that is right will follow. The challenge is to keep bringing yourself back to the path of the higher self. Sometimes you will experience the ecstasy of being in the flow. Sometimes you will experience the agony of being way off course. Just say yes to it all. Say yes to life. Participate, move,